When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 72, Eli Arispe Henches. On April 5th, 2017, a concerned resident of an apartment building in Bram, Minnesota, called 911 after hearing screaming from the apartment below. When police responded, they found 2-month-old Eli Arispe Henches dead in his playpen. Eli's mother, 24-year-old Cheyenne Henches, was interviewed by investigators, but her story changed when Eli's autopsy revealed his tiny skull had been fractured. This is the story of a baby born into less than optimal circumstances. It's also the story of a young mother whose temper, exacerbated by her abuse of drugs and alcohol, led to the violent death of her own infant son. This is the tragic story of Eli Arispe Henches. Before I get into Eli's story, I'd like to thank my newest patrons, Brittany from Crystal Lake, Illinois, Sharon from Buckeye, Arizona, and Lisette from Asgard. Thank you so much to all of my patrons for your support. If you'd like to support the show, you can visit patreon.com/stlcpod. All pledge levels have rewards, but patrons who pledge $10 a month or more receive access to Patreon-exclusive bonus minisodes, which I try to release once or twice a month. I just released the 4th bonus minisode over the weekend, in which I told the heartbreaking story of 5-month-old Emmy Chambers. I actually planned for the last bonus minisode to feature the little guy I'm covering today, Eli, but once I dug into the hundreds of pages of court documents available in his case, I quickly realized there was way too much information to devote anything shorter than a full episode to Eli's story. With that, here we go. At 12:54 p.m. on February 3rd, 2017, Eli Gage Arispe Henches was born via cesarean section at the Cambridge Medical Center in Cambridge, Minnesota. Eli was a perfectly healthy baby, born at 39 weeks gestation, weighing 7 pounds, 3.1 ounces. At the time of Eli's birth, his parents, Cheyenne Henches and Dylan Arispe, were both unemployed and homeless. Dylan was sleeping in a tent in the nearby city of Bram, and Cheyenne was couch surfing at the homes of various friends and family members. Before Eli was born, members of Cheyenne's family tried to talk her into putting the baby up for adoption to ensure his health and safety, but when Eli came along, Cheyenne decided to keep him, despite her nomadic lifestyle and lack of income. For the first month after Eli was born, he and his mother stayed with her former foster parents, Stuart and Pam Schmidt, spending weekends with Cheyenne's biological parents in Bram. Cheyenne's foster mother, Pam, helped out with the baby. At one point during their stay with the Schmidts, Cheyenne was feeding Eli in bed when, she later claimed, she fell asleep because she was exhausted, as most sleep-deprived new mothers tend to be. While she slept, she said, Eli rolled off the queen-sized bed, fell to the carpeted floor below, and immediately began crying. Cheyenne decided not to seek medical treatment for the baby, who seemed fine, if a little shaken up by his plummet to the floor. When Eli was almost 2 months old, Cheyenne and Dylan moved into their own apartment in a small, four-unit building in Braham. By that time, Dylan had found a job working Monday through Friday. His hours required him to get up around 4:40 a.m. and return home around 3 p.m. Because he didn't have a driver's license, he caught rides to and from work with a friend. At Eli's well baby checkup on March 30, 2017, nurse Julie Larson noticed a rash on Eli's arms, chest, head, and upper back, which Cheyenne said had been present for about 3 days. The nurse also made note of a couple of darker bruise marks on Eli's left arm. Cheyenne explained that Eli's arm had been stepped on by a puppy. Dylan had his fair share of troubles with the law, beginning in 2015 with arrests for disorderly conduct, receiving stolen property, and theft. In 2016, he was arrested twice for fleeing a peace officer on foot, twice for trespassing, and once for possession of drug paraphernalia. When he failed to appear at a court hearing for one of his trespassing charges, Dylan was arrested on April 1, 2017 on a probation violation warrant and spent the weekend in jail, leaving Cheyenne to care for the baby alone. Cheyenne herself has had a few brushes with the law, mostly petty misdemeanors stemming from traffic citations, such as driving with no proof of insurance, driving with no insurance, and driving after her license was revoked. In 2015, she was charged with theft of movable property, for which she accepted a plea agreement and was sentenced to a year of supervised probation. 2 days after Dylan's most recent arrest, at Eli's two-month well-baby visit on April 3, 2017, the baby received 4 immunizations, and no additional medical concerns above and beyond the rash were noted. 2 days after that, the unthinkable happened. At 10:52 a.m. on April 5, 2017, two separate neighbors living in the apartment building at 112 Main Street South in Braham, Minnesota, called 911 to report blood-curdling screams coming from another unit in the building. One of the residents, a man named Mr. Fisher, told the dispatcher it sounded like the baby in the apartment below his may not be breathing. Braham Police Chief Robert Knowles responded to the apartment building, where Mr. Fisher directed him to apartment 4. Inside the apartment, Chief Knowles encountered 24-year-old Cheyenne Henches and her mother, Paula Peterson, who lived in the apartment next door. Both women were crying and pointed him toward an open bedroom door. In the playpen that served as the baby's crib, the officer found 2-month-old Eli Gage Arispe Henches. According to court documents, Chief Knowles indicated that the baby had white-colored extremities, a light gray-colored complexion on its face, mottling of blood on the left side of its cheek, was cool to the touch, and had rigor mortis. Based upon this information, Chief Knowles believed that the baby had passed and had been so for some time. Chief Knowles called for the medical examiner, who arrived at around noon. Eli, a precious little boy with the sweetest smile, was pronounced dead at the scene. Minnesota State Trooper Scott Friedel and Asante County Sheriff's Deputy Brandon Oliver guarded the door to Eli's bedroom and the door to the apartment, respectively, until Eli's body was removed at approximately 12:15 p.m. When interviewed the same day, Cheyenne told police that she had awakened at around 2 a.m. to feed Eli a bottle, put him back to sleep around 2:30, and went back to bed herself until Dylan's alarm had gone off at 4:40 a.m., just 2 hours and 10 minutes after she had put Eli back to bed after his 2 a.m. feeding. At that time, she said, she was
extremely tired, completely exhausted, and wishing she could just get some sleep.
After Dylan left for work, Cheyenne said, she returned to bed and slept until 10:40 a.m. When she went into Eli's bedroom and turned the baby over, she found him cold to the touch and not breathing, his face blue and lifeless. Cheyenne claimed to have no idea what happened to Eli. Eli's obituary read,
Eli was the light of his family's lives. His smile was precious and his smell was so sweet. He loved to listen to music and look at the bright colors of his mobile. He always had a huge smile for his mommy when she tweaked his cheeks. He will forever be in the hearts of his family. He is now dancing with the angels and smiling down on everyone.
Although the case was being investigated in Asante County, Eli's autopsy was performed the day he died by Dr. Quinn Strobel of the Midwest Medical Examiner's Office in Anoka County. Her preliminary screening revealed healing rib fractures, bruising on Eli's head, and at least 2 skull fractures, which Dr. Strobel believed were related to the baby's death. The following day, on April 6th, Eli's death investigation was assigned to Investigator Kevin Carlson of the Ashanti County Sheriff's Department, who would be assisted by fellow investigator Rob Boker, as well as Special Agent Brent Peterson from the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Investigation. The trio was also assisted by the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Crime Scene Team. Investigator Carlson obtained a search warrant to process Cheyenne and Dylan's apartment, where multiple items of possible evidentiary value were collected. Later that day, he tracked down Cheyenne and Dylan at the funeral home in Bram and requested they accompany him to the Ashanti County Sheriff's Department. Dylan was transported in the investigator's vehicle, while Cheyenne rode behind in a car driven by her sister, Amanda Henches. That afternoon, Eli's parents were interviewed separately and extensively at the Ashanti County Sheriff's Department. Dylan was interviewed at length by investigator Kevin Carlson, who noted that Dylan became emotional and visibly upset, even crying at times. During her interview with investigator Rob Boker and Special Agent Peterson, Cheyenne was observed to show little or no emotion. During those interviews, investigators learned that Dylan's alarm went off as usual at 4:40 a.m. on the morning of April 5th. Cheyenne got up around 4:56 and began making coffee for Dylan, peeking into Eli's room and seeing the baby sleeping on his stomach, making a sound she described as snoring. After Dylan left for work, Cheyenne said goodbye, locked the apartment door, and went back to bed. When she awoke at 10:40 to feed Eli in front of the TV, she found him unresponsive. When investigators mentioned the preliminary autopsy results, she had no answers as to how Eli's skull had been fractured. She did suggest it may have occurred when Eli fell off a chair or a couch 2 days before he died. That, however, was the day of Eli's well baby visit, and at that time, no head injuries were reported or noted by medical staff. On April 10th, investigators Carlson and Boker interviewed Cheyenne's foster father, Stuart Schmidt, who told them Cheyenne was diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome, causing her to function at the mentality of a 12 or 14-year-old. Court documents later stated,
Mr. Schmidt explained that it was a long process to train Ms. Henches to care for Eli, but she was able to follow directions.
When asked if showing her the medical report may help her remember what happened, Stuart said that
she would likely nod her head and agree with what they said, but wouldn't get it. Would not be able to say it back to them.
Cheyenne was interviewed yet again on April 11th, this time telling investigators
something might have happened
when she got up to feed Eli at 2 a.m. on April 5th. According to the probable cause statement,
Cheyenne Henches was given ample opportunity to tell investigators what had happened.
At first, she claimed she had cut her finger 5 days before on a ceramic toothbrush holder, and that when she woke up to feed Eli at 2 a.m. on the day of his death, she went to the bathroom to get a Band-Aid. She said she was carrying Eli in an upright position on her left side, facing inward, with her left arm wrapped around his middle, which she demonstrated for investigators using an anatomical doll. On the way out of the bathroom, Cheyenne said, crying as she recounted the incident, she was
exhausted and just wanted to get back to bed and sleep.
And she heard Eli's head hit the doorframe on her way out of the bathroom, which, she explained, was the cause of his fatal head injury. Investigators pointed out, however, that there was no bruising or trauma to the left side of Eli's head, and that, in fact, the fracture on the left side of his skull had already begun to heal. It was most likely the fatal skull fracture was actually the one on the right side of his head. Confronted with this information, Cheyenne admitted to
maybe putting Eli down too forcefully
in his crib after the 2 a.m. feeding. Sobbing, Cheyenne demonstrated with the doll how she carried Eli into his bedroom that morning and threw her helpless infant into his crib, where the right side of his body and head made contact with the wall, after which he fell down into his playpen. She said she repositioned him into the center of his crib on his stomach before returning to bed herself. When Cheyenne was interviewed by police on April 12th, her foster mother, Pam Schmidt, was permitted to sit in with her for a portion of her questioning. During the April 12th interview, Cheyenne changed her description of the snoring sound she previously said she heard Eli making at 4:40 a.m., saying now that he was making a gurgling sound. This was likely caused by the blood Dr. Strobel found in Eli's mouth during the autopsy. As part of the investigation, Cheyenne's cell phone was also examined, as well as her Facebook profile and two profiles belonging to Dylan. Investigator Carlson discovered multiple concerning text and Facebook messages between Cheyenne and her sister, Amanda. In these messages, Cheyenne complained that she was essentially raising Eli on her own because of Dylan's continuing drug and alcohol abuse. Cheyenne mentioned Dylan at times coming home late from work,
stoned, drunk, or drugged.
Cheyenne complained to Amanda that she was under a lot of stress and suffering from lack of sleep. She told Amanda that she had second thoughts about
keeping this kid,
citing her lack of sleep, chronic exhaustion, and absence of help from Dylan. She also complained of financial problems and indicated her own ongoing abuse of drugs and alcohol, mentioning at one point
snorting a line of meth
while caring for Eli. The messages also indicated that Cheyenne and Dylan's relationship was fraught with domestic violence. 3 months after Eli's death, Investigator Carlson received an email from the medical examiner's office containing the official findings of Eli's autopsy.
The post-mortem examination showed a normally developed infant male in the 25% for length and weight, without evidence of congenital abnormalities or natural disease process.
However, as mentioned in her preliminary report, Dr. Strobel found that Eli
had suffered acute, hours to days, and chronic, days to weeks, blunt force head injuries and 2 posterior healing rib fractures on ribs 6 and 7.
When the doctor reflected or pulled back Eli's scalp, she discovered extensive bruising of the tissue beneath Eli's scalp and the membrane covering his skull. In addition, a healing skull fracture was evident on the left side of Eli's head, and a fresh, horizontal 11-centimeter fracture spanned the right side of Eli's skull. Dr. Strobel ruled Eli's death a homicide caused by blunt force head injuries with possible contributing positional asphyxia due to unsafe sleeping conditions.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On January 8, 2018, investigator Kevin Carlson once again met with Cheyenne Hinches at the Asante County Sheriff's Department, making use of both available interview rooms. Assisting him with the interview, which was both audio and video recorded, was Asante County Child Protection Officer Jennifer Callahan. Saying he needed to
clarify some points with regard to the case,
Investigator Carlson read Cheyenne her Miranda rights before going over some of the details she had provided in her previous interviews, including her description of how she put Eli down after his 2 a.m. feeding. A playpen was set up to simulate the layout of Eli's bedroom. Investigator Carlson asked Cheyenne to show him again how she held Eli as she walked out of the bathroom and struck his head on the doorframe. Cheyenne demonstrated by picking up the anatomical doll and holding it in a cradling position in her left arm, facing upward with its feet toward her abdomen. Investigator Carlson pointed out that this was different from how she had shown him she was carrying Eli during her interview a week after Eli's death, even showing her the video from that interview. Cheyenne told the investigators that the incident occurred almost a year ago, so she couldn't remember how she was carrying Eli. Investigator Carlson reminded her that the first time she showed them how she was carrying Eli that day was only a week after the baby's death. During the January 8th demonstration, when Cheyenne demonstrated how the baby's head hit the doorframe, the investigator noted it made
a significant bang or thud sound.
Cheyenne, who confirmed she did not seek medical attention for Eli after hitting his head on the doorframe, admitted that this injury actually took place a couple days before she threw Eli into his playpen. The investigators again requested Cheyenne show them how she put Eli down,
not so nice,
in his playpen. This demonstration, which Cheyenne was asked to repeat multiple times, was videotaped from 3 different camera angles and was described in the probable cause affidavit as follows.
Investigator Kevin Carlson observed Cheyenne Hinches walking at a fast pace, and as she got closer to the pack and play, she repositioned Eli into her arms and threw him downward. Investigator Kevin Carlson observed the head of the doll used for the demonstration by Cheyenne Hinches struck the wall with a remarkable thud sound as the head and body of the doll struck the wall. The manner in which Cheyenne Hinches carried Eli in her arms and then repositioned Eli's body in her arms just before throwing him down appeared to be intentionally meant to forcefully throw Eli downward. Investigator Kevin Carlson noted the manner in which Cheyenne Hinches demonstrated her actions during the interview on April 12, 2017, were minimized based upon her demonstration of January 8, 2018.
Finally, 9 months after Eli's death, authorities had enough evidence to charge Cheyenne Hinches with second-degree murder without intent and first-degree unintentional manslaughter, arresting the young mother at her apartment around 11 a.m. on January 10, 2018. She was booked into the Asante County Jail, and her bail was set at $500,000 without conditions and $250,000 with conditions, one of which was that if she were released, she was to have no contact with Dylan Arispe. After Cheyenne's arrest, Asante County Attorney Jeff Edblad spoke about the case, saying the last time he prosecuted a parent for the murder of their own child was around 2006.
"We're here today because of a tragedy. We're here today to speak for a two-month-old child, a victim who is now dead and will never be able to speak for himself. Cheyenne behaved in a way that caused injuries to her two-month-old son, including skull fractures and rib fractures. There was also evidence noted in the autopsy that there were previous injuries that were healing at the time of his death. The allegations are that on April 5, 2017, Cheyenne Hinches engaged in conduct that led to skull fractures of her two-month-old son."
Asante County Sheriff Chris Kalk said,
"I can remember that day when I heard the call come out, and of course your heart always goes out to somebody whose child isn't breathing, because you don't know what it is at the time. Then you become suspicious as you look at the ongoing investigation, and then you start thinking, how could somebody hurt such a little one? It was with the work of Investigator Carlson and Investigator Boker, the Minnesota BCA, the crime lab, the forensics team, and what they did for us to get us to where we are today. If it wasn't for their work, who knows who would have talked for Eli, who would have spoke up for him. Again, Cheyenne Hinches is innocent until proven guilty. However, with the evidence that we have, it was a very horrendous situation."
Jeff Edblad added,
"A tragedy like this is so preventable when you consider the resources available, when you consider the family members, when you consider friends, when you consider the fact that Minnesota has the safe harbor statute, when you look at the resources available through family services. There are so many resources out there for people to reach out to."
Minnesota's Safe Place for Newborns law allows babies 7 days old or younger to be dropped off, no questions asked, at a hospital or healthcare facility offering urgent care. In fact, all 50 states, as well as the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, currently have similar safe haven laws on the books. I'll include the link in the show notes to a childwelfare.gov publication about these life-saving laws, which I fully believe should be included in our children's sex education curriculum. In September of 2018, at an omnibus hearing in Asante County District Court, overseen by Judge John Klossner, Cheyenne's defense team, attorneys Bryce Norton and Drake Metzger, filed a motion for relief, which I'll break down into individual parts. The first part of the motion stated,
"The warrants to search Ms. Hinch's iPhone 5S were unconstitutionally overbroad, and all evidence obtained from the phone must be suppressed."
Investigator Carlson obtained a search warrant on April 6, 2017, which sought, among other things, a
cell phone located in or near the crime scene and all data within the phone.
The investigator applied for a second search warrant on April 10th, specifically to search Cheyenne's white Apple iPhone 5S, which was described as having a
cracked screen and damage to the front.
Through those search warrants, the incriminating text and Facebook messages I discussed earlier were recovered. According to court documents,
the text messages discuss Ms. Hinch's use of alcohol, being hungover, regretting keeping Eli, wishing she could get out of here, and that Eli was crying and being horrible.
The next item in the defense's motion for relief was that
a change of venue should be granted because a fair trial cannot be had in Asante County.
The defense claimed that due to pretrial publicity, it would be impossible to conduct a fair and impartial trial in Asante County. To bolster their position, Cheyenne's attorneys presented a 202-page document containing news articles with prejudicial titles such as
"Woman Intentionally Threw Child, Causing Death."
The articles contained information about the statements Cheyenne made to police, statements from the Asante County attorney and the Asante County sheriff discussing the case and previous injuries Eli had sustained, as well as the text and Facebook messages between Cheyenne and her sister. The defense team argued that the reach of these news stories was potentially limitless, using as an example a news story about the case posted by KTSP on May 11, 2018, which was liked 532 times, shared 81 times, and commented on 106 times on the KTSP page alone, not even counting the comments on the post shares. The court document stated,
Facebook allows commenting on articles. These articles are not static, but instead grow and evolve as they are shared on social media. The public comments add a whole dimension of how prejudicial spreading these articles is and offer insight into how the public has reacted to these articles. It is evident from reading the comments that the public has already circumvented judicial process and predetermined Ms. Henches is guilty.
The comments in question were gems such as,
"Quit making excuses for her. She needs to die. Why even bother keeping trash like this alive to sit in a cell?"
And,
"Death penalty is best for her."
One woman even commented,
"Sure would like to land on jury duty for this one. I'm in Asante County."
This is why we have to be very careful with the comments we leave. Another point brought up in the motion was that
Count 1, second-degree unintentional felony murder, should be dismissed for lack of probable cause.
The defense argued that there were no allegations in the criminal complaint against Cheyenne that she intended to harm or kill Eli. Finally, the defense moved to suppress Cheyenne's statements to officers, both during interviews when she had been read her Miranda rights and during those when she hadn't. In December of 2018, Judge Klossner ordered
defendant's motion for change of venue, suppress evidence, and dismiss for lack of probable cause is denied in its entirety.
As a result of the denial of her motion, Cheyenne Henches waived her right to a jury trial and opted instead for a bench trial, which left her fate up to the decision of the judge alone. There would be no traditional trial and no witnesses called. Judge Klossner would instead make his decision based on the evidence presented in the case. In opting for a court trial, Cheyenne waived her rights to testify before the court, to have prosecution witnesses testify, to question those witnesses in open court, and to call any favorable witnesses to testify for her. On October 7, 2019, Cheyenne's bench trial began when the state, represented by Jeffrey Edblad, introduced 25 exhibits into evidence, including two large binders containing almost 1,100 pages of documents, photographs, and transcripts, as well as multiple compact discs containing audio and video recordings of interviews, crime scene photos, video, and Cheyenne's cell phone data. The state provided the court with its written closing argument on October 31, 2019, and the defense submitted its reply on November 19th. Judge Klossner took the matter under advisement on November 26th. 1 week later, on December 3, 2019, Judge John Klossner found Cheyenne Henches, by that time age 26, guilty of felony second-degree murder without intent while committing a felony, which was assault in the third degree, with the aggravating factor that the victim was
particularly vulnerable
due to his age. Because of her murder conviction, Cheyenne was found not guilty of the manslaughter charge. Until her sentencing, which was scheduled to take place on February 20, 2020, Cheyenne remained behind bars on a $500,000 bond. After the verdict was handed down, the Asante County Sheriff's Office released a statement that read,
"While this was a very difficult case for everyone involved, we want to thank everyone that helped bring justice for this infant. It takes a village to raise a child. If you or someone you know needs help, please reach out to Asante County Family Services, as well as many other community resources."
Eli's dad, Dylan, told Fox 9 that he wanted only one thing.
"Just justice for Eli, and then he goes to rest."
A week before Cheyenne was scheduled to be sentenced, her attorneys filed a motion with the court to delay the hearing on the grounds that their client could obtain an expert's report on her fetal alcohol syndrome. Judge Klossner denied the motion, saying,
"To be frank, I felt it was untimely, so I denied it."
Prosecutor Edblad agreed with the judge's decision, saying that there was plenty of time between the guilty verdict in December and the scheduled sentencing in February for the defense to obtain such a report.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you're like me, you're a bit overwhelmed by all of the teeth whitening products on the market. This next sponsor has provided me with some very interesting facts to pass on to you. Fact 1, teeth whitening does not whiten your teeth. It removes the stains and restores the tooth to its natural color. Natural colors vary per person, but for most, it's an off-white or slightly yellowish undertone. Fact 2, teeth whitening does not damage teeth, but it does temporarily dehydrate. When dehydrated, the pores in the enamel are open and exposed. Open pores invite acids and sugars, which, as we all know, lead to tooth decay. Avoid or minimize acidic and sugary substances for at least 24 hours after whitening. Also, avoid staining substances as the teeth are more susceptible to restaining during this period. Fact 3, tooth sensitivity is the result of tooth dehydration. When the pores of the enamel are open, the teeth become dehydrated, exposing the nerve to the elements. As the tooth rehydrates, the sensitivity will dissipate. To accelerate the rehydration and curb sensitivity, use a post-whitening application known as remineralization or desensitizing gel. Fact 4, caps and veneers cannot be whitened because they do not have pores for the stains to latch to. Prior to having dental work, you should whiten your teeth, restoring them to their natural color, as the dentist will be color matching to your current shade. Fact 5, the key to teeth whitening is the delivery device, so as long as a whitening product is a peroxide-based whitener, it will remove the stains. What differentiates one product from the next is the device that holds the whitening agent to the tooth without interruption. Whitening strips neglect the crevices and molars, and they slide on your teeth. Saliva floods the generic trays because they are bulky and do not create a seal. Oh, and you likely did not know this, but LED lights are novelty items that add no benefit. You need a high-output UV light only found at the dentist. Don't fall for the gimmick. If you insist on a light that does not work, get one on Amazon for under $5. The number one whitening device recommended by dentists is the custom-fitted tray. You can have your dentist make you trays for $300 to $600, or you can head over to smilebrilliant.com and use their lab direct mail-in process for a fraction of the price you would pay at the dentist. Oh, and if you grind your teeth at night, you can also purchase Smile Brilliant's custom-fitted night guards, once again, for a fraction of the price the dentists charge. Once again, that's smilebrilliant.com, and use my coupon code CHILDREN for an exclusive Suffer the Little Children discount. At Cheyenne's sentencing hearing on February 20th, 2020, Dylan's oldest sister, Amanda Hobbs, read her brother's victim impact statement, saying,
"I'm here on behalf of my brother Dylan, who couldn't be here because of his distress and the trauma that this has caused in his life. Today I sat here in my final phase of my fight in seeking justice for my son, Eli. This is the day I had been waiting for almost 3 years. To get up and speak about the loss I have been through because of Cheyenne's disgusting behavior and negligence toward our son, Eli. I entrusted the care of my son without a question to his mother, Cheyenne. I thought she was the safest person to care for our son. I thought she would protect him with her life. This would happen to be my greatest mistake. Cheyenne killed our son, April 5th, 2017. I will not get into details about how because this is not important. I'm sure we have all heard of how and why, according to Cheyenne. Unfortunately, my family not only lost Eli that day, they lost me as well. After the loss of my son, I fell into the deepest, darkest hole. Part of me, physically, mentally, emotionally, I felt dead with no reason to keep moving forward. It took me some time, but with the help of my family, I have started to pull out of my darkness. But every day is still a struggle. Cheyenne not only took my son, she also gave everything that reminded me of him away shortly after his service. She didn't even give me his ashes. So all I'm left with in this short time of memories with him are memories that are left dancing in my head. February 3rd would have been Eli's golden birthday. This will be the third birthday in many I have not gotten to celebrate with my son. There's so much that I have already missed out on because of Cheyenne and her actions. Just to name a few, I'll never hear my son say Dada or see Eli take his first step. Never will I see Eli ride his first bike or hit his first T-ball. I can go on for days, maybe years, with what I will never get to see my son do. The only thing I look forward to now is justice for my son, Eli. This is what is holding me together. As my fight comes to an end, I want to ask the judge to give Cheyenne the time she deserves. I ask that she is given the max sentence. My son was not offered a light sentence. She sentenced Eli to death. Cheyenne, plead the judge and the jury in the case of my son, Eli. I also want to ask the judge to have Cheyenne to turn over my son's ashes to me. I don't believe she should have them or have access to them, since she is the one who took our son's life. I'll end my letter by saying, I love you, Eli, with all my heart, and there's not one day that I'm not thinking of you. Eli, I know you're surrounded by family who loves you unconditionally, and I will be with you one day. Love, Dad. Dylan.
Dylan's mother, Michelle Hobbs, also stepped up to deliver a gut-wrenching statement describing her family as
beyond repair. Considering the pain and suffering my son Dylan continues to live with since this senseless act, he has experienced a mental breakdown to the point he has been hospitalized on multiple occasions. He has been diagnosed with psychosis because of the trauma of losing baby Eli at the hands of Cheyenne.
Michelle's statement included a powerful narrative told from Eli's point of view, spoken through tears that, at times, blinded her.
Imagine your baby Eli and mommy Cheyenne, this God-given protector, this evil person, comes in for a 2 a.m. feeding. She doesn't want anything to do with you or your crying, of course. You can sense irritation because Cheyenne, this evil person, wants nothing more than to go back to sleep. You sense it's going to end badly because of what has taken place in the past 2 short months of your life. This vibration of discontent rings out in your senses, so feeding you, maybe changing your diaper, doesn't fix your discontent, and your suffering is getting worse. Maybe Cheyenne shakes you. Maybe Cheyenne yells at you to shut up, but nothing is working, so Cheyenne has had it. She's full of anger, takes you into your room, and forcefully throws you across the room. You land against the wall and fall into your pack and play. Crash goes the right side of your already fractured skull off the wall. Are you knocked out? Then Cheyenne comes into the room and repositions you onto your tummy with several blankets around you into your pack and play, which ultimately is your deathbed. Cheyenne just walks out, closing the door, knowing what she has just done to you, and goes to sleep. Are you still imagining that you are baby Eli? Now you are all alone in your bed with fractures all through your tiny little body. Are you thinking you just want the one who loves you the most to come in and hold you, but he sleeps in and has to rush out for work? His ride is waiting, and he doesn't want to be late. Daddy will live with this decision for the rest of his life. The only morning Daddy didn't come in and give you kisses and loves and tell you he will see you when he gets home. Are you still imagining that you are baby Eli? It is 4:50 a.m., and Daddy has gone to work. Mommy opens the door to your room, and you're making a gurgling sound while clinging to life. If she would have just picked you up and called 911, knowing what she had done at the 2 a.m. feeding. Instead, in her own words, she goes back to sleep, while you are suffering and gurgling for hours until you die all alone.
Prosecutor Ed Blad also gave a moving statement, beginning with a short account of serving as pallbearer earlier that week for his 94-year-old aunt.
A lot can be said about a life well lived over 94 years. The lives touched, the lives impacted. What do you say about a life of 2 months? You don't talk about a life well lived. You talk about a life of those experiences that will never take place. We don't know what life would have held for Eli, but what we do know is that his mother throwing him into the wall and leaving him to die in his bed was completely, totally, and absolutely preventable in every way, shape, and form.
Both sides mentioned at the hearing that Cheyenne reportedly had a difficult childhood, but only the prosecution argued that a difficult childhood doesn't cause a person to murder her infant child.
I think it's incredibly important to keep something in mind, Judge. Cheyenne didn't win the genetic lottery, but she had an incredible support system in her life.
Mr. Ed Blad pointed out that the gallery was full of Cheyenne's family members and supporters. He also made note of Minnesota's Safe Place for Newborns law.
This is a woman sitting in front of the court with a support system to rely on. Rather than use the support system, the defendant threw this 2-month-old baby and left him to die in his bed.
Cheyenne's defense had attempted to argue that she felt remorse and was
amenable to probation.
The prosecutor explained to the judge the lack of remorse Cheyenne displayed in the months leading up to her sentencing.
There was a phone call in early February where she's talking to her new boyfriend about when she gets out, looking forward to engaging in sexual activities, doing mushrooms, and smoking marijuana, trying to get a medical marijuana card so she can smoke marijuana. There was also a text message that the defendant sent her new boyfriend. Paraphrasing, I'm not quite sure why I'm in here, but something happened to my baby and he died. When I walked into the office this morning, I was informed that a member of the jail staff called this morning to see what was going on, because the defendant had been on the phone making an appointment to get a tattoo once she got out of custody later today, and was looking forward to meeting up with her new boyfriend, and was planning on starting a family with him.
Prosecutor Ed Blad also pointed out Cheyenne's poor disciplinary record while in the custody of the Asante County Sheriff's Office, during which she had tallied up multiple infractions, including sending sexually explicit messages on her cell phone device, unauthorized use of the phone, creating disturbances, lying to personnel, failing to keep her cell clean, trading items from the canteen against jail rules, testing positive for methamphetamine while in custody, trying to obtain products to create
some kind of hooch-making still,
and violating the court's orders not to contact Dylan.
If you can't follow the rules of a closed facility, how will you follow the rules of society? The defendant has shown by her conduct while in custody that she's not amenable to probation. This is a case where prison is warranted, where prison is called for.
The prosecution sought the maximum punishment of 150 months, or 12 and a half years, in prison, also requesting a mandatory minimum fine to be taken from Cheyenne's prison wages. Defense attorney Metzger again brought up Cheyenne's difficult childhood, beginning by being born to parents with chemical dependency issues and frequent contact with the criminal justice system themselves. When she was 11, she went into foster care with the Schmitz.
And that's when she began to flourish. She began to do very well. She completed high school. She was active in school groups. She had extracurricular activities. She did some college. She was gainfully employed. Then, at 21, she moved back in with her biological parents, and that's when the downward spiral began. That's also the time that she met her boyfriend, Mr. Arispe.
At that point, Metzger said, Cheyenne was introduced to methamphetamine, although she did stop the drug while she was pregnant. Because of her fetal alcohol syndrome, Cheyenne, Metzger argued, had the mental capacity of a 14-year-old and was
highly susceptible to suggestion, impulsivity, apathy, but also just being highly suggestible.
These factors, he said, made her unamenable to prison because she would be easily victimized. What Cheyenne really needed, Metzger insisted, was to receive mental health treatment, participate in programs, and to be in a supportive, positive environment. He suggested that putting her on probation and
hanging time over her head
was the best course of action. With that, Metzger requested Cheyenne's immediate release so she could move in with her sister and begin receiving treatment. Judge Klossner then allowed Cheyenne to speak.
Your Honor, thank you for allowing me to express my feelings of remorse following my son's passing. I never in a million years had any intentions of harming my son. He was the love of my life and always will be. There isn't a day or night that goes by that he's not in my thoughts or dreams.
After talking about all of the experiences she would miss having with Eli, who she said she would grieve for the rest of her life, Cheyenne said,
I will never be able to forgive myself for what I did, nor do I expect anyone else to. But this loss is more punishment than this court could ever sentence me to.
Finally, the judge himself spoke.
Mr. Metzger said that this case is easy to call a tragedy and sort of move on. I don't think there's anything easy about this. If you folks are here looking for me to say something wise or sage that will help make sense of all this, you're in the wrong spot because I don't have anything for you. I really don't. If you're here because you're looking for a sentence one way or the other that's going to make you feel better about why we're here, I don't have anything to offer you. I just don't. We had a 2-month-old child die, and under any circumstance, that's awful. I don't know that there are adequate words in the English language to express what comes from that. There's another level of awful when that death comes about at the hands of a parent. Ms. Henches had to walk a tougher road than anyone should have to. You don't choose who your parents are. You don't choose where you were born. And certainly Ms. Henches bears the scars of that.
The judge said that he had considered Cheyenne's fetal alcohol syndrome and the discussions about what would be best for her, but he also noted that although Cheyenne claimed not to have any help, she'd been surrounded by family throughout the process from arrest through sentencing.
I agree with Mr. Edblad. This is something that was eminently preventable. The defense has argued, among other things, that Ms. Henches is particularly amenable to probation, that she is functioning at the level of a 14-year-old and lacks the insight of her behaviors, which is why she didn't reach out for help, which is why she didn't adhere to the rules in custody. There are many, too many folks in the world, quite frankly, who suffer from the same afflictions that Ms. Henches has, but are able to raise their children without harming them.
He was also, Judge Klossner said, bothered by some of Cheyenne's conversations while in jail about her plans to use illegal and prescription drugs when she was released.
The court cannot find that there are substantial reasons to depart from the sentencing guidelines.
With that, Judge Klossner sentenced Cheyenne Henches to the maximum term of 12 and a half years. 8 1/3 of those years would be spent in prison, and the remaining 4 would be spent on supervised probation, although violation of the conditions of her probation could extend her stay in prison to the full term. She was, by law, granted credit for 2 years and 42 days served in the Asante County Jail. Cheyenne, now 27 years old, is incarcerated at the Minnesota Correctional Facility at Shakopee. Her anticipated release date is listed as May 11, 2026. Her probation will be finished in July of 2030, when her son Eli should be 13 years old and anticipating his 8th grade year. Instead, his tiny body has been reduced to ashes before he even reached 3 months of age. It doesn't seem fair, does it? Not even close. But at least the judge gave her the maximum sentence possible under the law. We can only hope Cheyenne learns her lesson and spends the rest of her life trying to make up for her mistakes. Within a few months of her sentencing, Cheyenne appealed her conviction on the grounds that the district court should have convicted her on the allegedly more specific offense of first-degree manslaughter rather than second-degree unintentional murder. The whole argument was a lot of splitting hairs and legal mumbo-jumbo, but in April of 2021, the Court of Appeals affirmed her conviction. Her team submitted a petition to the Minnesota Supreme Court to review the decision of the Court of Appeals, but the request was just denied last week on July 20th, 2021. I don't know what's next for Cheyenne. All I can do is hope she's learned her lesson and pray she doesn't procreate again once she's out of prison. Whether or not her fetal alcohol syndrome contributed to Eli's murder, Cheyenne has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that she is not equipped to be anyone's mother. I do hope Dylan is able to get his life together and that he, his family, and Cheyenne's family are all able to move forward and keep Eli's memory alive in a positive way. Eli only had 2 months on this earth, but that's plenty long enough to leave his mark on the hearts of everyone who loved him and even those who never met him. Dance with the angels, Eli. You will always be remembered. My sources for this episode were the Asante Chisago County Star, the Star Tribune, Crime Online, Fox 9, KTSP, Hometown Source, the Rock Ingebrand Funeral Home website, the Kennebec County Times, Facebook, the Minnesota Department of Corrections website, Minnesota Court Records Online, Minnesota Public Access Remote, and court documents. That's it for this week. Join me next week for another story. If you like the show, please follow or subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. And please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes or become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter and TikTok at STLC Pod. View photos related to today's episode on Facebook and Instagram. For more stories like the one you heard today, visit sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast is researched, written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music, and all music for the show is licensed from audiojungle.net. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildrenpod@gmail.com. For more information about preventing or reporting child abuse, visit childhelp.org or call your area's child abuse hotline. If you see something, say something. Until next week, bye everyone.